Welcome to the SCI Forum podcast. This podcast was produced by the Northwest Regional Spinal Cord Injury System in the University of Washington Department of Rehabilitation Medicine. The Northwest Regional SCI System is dedicated to improving the lives of people with SCI through excellent patient care, research, and education. To learn more about our podcasts and videos, or to make a donation, go to sci.washington.edu.
Hello, and welcome to the Spinal Cord Injury Forum podcast. My name is Jeannie Hoffman, and I'm a clinical psychologist and professor in the University of Washington Department of Rehabilitation Medicine. While there's always a lot of research going on at the University of Washington and in our department, some of our core spinal cord injury quality of life researchers are starting studies in the next few weeks, and we wanted to hear a little bit more about these projects. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Deborah Crane. Debbie is a board-certified physician in physical medicine and rehabilitation, and she has a subspecialty in spinal cord injury medicine. She is an associate professor, also the Rehabilitation Medicine Chief of Service and Medical Director of Inpatient Rehabilitation at Harborview Medical Center. Thanks for joining us today, Debbie.
Thanks for having me.
We will definitely at some point probably want to talk to you about how you ended up choosing spinal cord injury, but today I really want us to spend time talking about your new research study. So can you tell me a little bit about it? What is the project?
Sure. So we're referring to it as SPRINT SCI. The full name is the Feasibility of a Sprint Interval Training Program During Inpatient Spinal Cord Injury Rehabilitation. And this is a pilot study. Basically, we are basing this on research that's been done in Canada and parts of Europe, where they've implemented sprint interval training programs. So this is short bouts of intense physical activity, and they've implemented these into inpatient rehabilitation and shown that people enjoy it and it can be fit into the inpatient rehabilitation program successfully. So one key difference between U.S. healthcare as far as inpatient rehabilitation and these other places around the world is that our length of stay for inpatient rehabilitation is about one-third the length or the duration as it is in Canada or parts of Europe. So our question then is we're basically adapting what's been done in these other areas of the world to the U.S. healthcare system, where people with new spinal cord injury are likely to be in inpatient rehab somewhere between maybe 3 and 6 weeks.
So why is it important to start this kind of intense exercise so early? What are you hoping to get, or what have these other people found?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the really key part of this is that what we've found over years of research is that people with spinal cord injury tend to become fairly inactive and fairly sedentary. And we know that that has potential negative health implications for people if they're not continuing to be as active as possible after a spinal cord injury. So what we're hoping is that by introducing individuals with new spinal cord injury to a way of exercising in short bouts that should be able to be fit into someone's daily activities, both in inpatient rehabilitation and then potentially once they're out of the hospital as well, they will kind of get started on road of exercise that they'll hopefully be able to maintain throughout the future of their lives and learning to live with spinal cord injury.
Right. So those would be kind of long-term outcomes. But you mentioned that this study that you're doing right now is a pilot or a kind of preliminary study. So like, how long is this pilot, and where are you going to conduct the pilot?
Yeah, so we're going to be conducting all the research at Harborview Medical Center on the inpatient rehab unit, and participation and data collection will probably go from late August 2023 through likely January of 2025. We have funding through the spring of 2025, but we anticipate wrapping up participation and data collection a bit earlier than that. And people will be enrolled in the study or approached for enrollment in the study who are newly admitted to the inpatient rehabilitation unit, who have new spinal cord injuries that can be classified as complete to incomplete, as long as they're not very, very incomplete, where we anticipate that the person may choose to do more of like a walking type of exercise in the future, where they may be more reliant on their arms. I should mention that the exercise intervention is going to be use of an arm ergometer. So our key kind of target individuals to include in this would be those that probably will be more reliant on using their arms for exercise than their legs.
So can you kind of do a day in the life of a participant? So somebody says, yes, I'm going to join your study. What is that actually going to look like for somebody? What's the experience going to look like?
The potential participants will be randomized to different groups, different participation groups. Some individuals would be randomized to just what we call usual care. They're just going to go through inpatient rehab the same way we did it last month and in June and just like that. Things aren't going to be any different. Some people will be randomized to a group where they are introduced to the sprint interval training, where with a physical or occupational therapist, they will do 3 bouts each week. There'll be 10-minute sessions, 3 per week, where they do intensive arm ergometry. So that's the second group. And then the third and fourth group will just be variations on that intervention of the sprint interval training. So 3 of the 4 groups will do these 3 times weekly intensive sprint interval training sessions. And then the one will be what we call usual care.
So can you explain to me what kind of interval, sprint interval training actually is? What does that actually mean in terms of what does somebody do to have that experience?
Sure. So sprint interval training differs from what one might consider like moderate intensity continuous training, in that the individual performing sprint interval training does some very intense cardiovascular exercise for a fairly short period of time. So in this intervention, we'd be looking at the participants doing 10 minutes of intensive exercise. It's not 10 minutes continuously. It's basically 3 bursts within that 10 minutes, essentially pedaling the arm ergometer as fast as one can. Someone could similarly do intensive interval training running or bicycling, where they would do a very intensive bout of exercise as hard as they could for 30 seconds, maybe up to 60 seconds. But these are short, intensive bouts and often clustered in a few together versus, oh, I'm going to go for a jog for 30 or 60 minutes, or I'm going to go for a bicycle ride for 60 minutes, that type of thing. This is short and intensive.
So when people talk about like the exercise prescriptions and they talk about the, what is it, 150 minutes of exercise per week, how does like this interval, sprint interval training figure into that? Like, so in this 10 minutes, is that similar to like a 30 minute workout or is it just a 10 minute workout? How does that translate into some of the ways we think about exercise? You mentioned kind of moderate exercise.
Yeah. So some research has actually shown that this intensive cardiovascular training can actually potentially be as effective as the more moderate intensity continuous training. So this particular study is not looking so much at the cardiovascular benefits, but potentially if one were to do the sprint interval training instead of more that traditional model of more moderate intensity cardiovascular training, the prescription would not be that longer duration of 150 minutes. So it's basically seeing, can one get a similar benefit from very intense but shorter bouts? But the real key difference is the intensity, is really kind of going all out or very close to all out for some short period of time versus sometimes people exercise at what one might refer to as like a conversational pace. So you're able to chat with your friend or that type of thing. This is really, you can't chat. You have to, you're 100% focused on what you're doing at a very intensive level for a short period of time.
That's really helpful. So this study isn't trying to meet that like amount of time by any means. It's just to see if you can do these and get people exercising so that maybe eventually they would hit that level of meeting that same demand.
Yeah, correct.
So what are the 3 differences? What makes the 3 groups different from each other? Is it just the amount of time that they're doing it or some combination?
Of the 3 that do the sprint interval training, one will just basically do sprint interval training while they're in inpatient rehab, and then we'll follow up with them at different intervals after they discharge from inpatient rehab to look at kind of what their physical activity is after discharge from rehab. The other group will engage in motivational interviewing with the assistance of one of our psychologists and co-investigators, Dr. Bombardier. That'll happen both during rehab and then afterwards. And then the 4th group will actually receive an arm ergometer, a home version that they will be able to bring home with them and potentially do exercise using this arm ergometer. And we included that to see if not having the exercise equipment is a barrier to participation. So our thought process was, if we are able to give someone the arm ergometer through the grant funds that we have, will they be more likely to remain more active and engaged in exercise after discharge from inpatient rehab?
That's great. So this is, you said a you know, basically total of 2 years that you have funding for this study, how many people are you going to be able to enroll, and how long can you follow them outside of inpatient rehab?
So as a pilot study, we're going to be enrolling 32 is our goal, 32 participants, and it'll be 8 per different group that I mentioned, usual care, the sprint interval training plus the motivational interviewing and sprint interval training with the arm ergometer that you go home with. So 4 times 8 participants, and we'll follow them for about 6 months after discharge from inpatient rehab. Our hope is that this study, as a preliminary or a pilot study, will set us up for being well positioned to get additional funds in the future where we could look more at efficacy. And so with that, we would be looking at potentially more physiologic or cardiovascular parameters. Does this affect people's heart rate? Does this affect their cardiovascular conditioning in other ways that we might measure that? Different actual more physiologic outcomes, rather than with this study, we're looking more at, did the people like it? Did they find it satisfactory? Could they stick with it? Those types of things for this smaller initial study.
So your kind of aims right now are just like, can you make this fit into inpatient rehab? Will people actually do any exercise afterwards after they leave inpatient rehab for that short duration? Those are the kind of questions you're asking right now, but not that, does this work? Does it, you know, make everybody better?
Exactly. Yeah. As anyone who's been through inpatient rehab knows, it's a really busy, intensive day, and it's day after day of that. So one question is, can someone add on some intensive exercise to what's already a busy day? And does this intensive exercise suggest that early on during the inpatient time suggest that participants will continue that once they're out of rehab?
Is there any limit on how long people might be in inpatient rehab? Because I would imagine there's some people that aren't going to get as much of the interval training if they get assigned to that group, if they get discharged in even 3 weeks versus 6 weeks, as you mentioned. Is there any limit there, or are you just going to take everybody and see how it turns out?
For the most part, we're going to take people and see how it turns out. The length of stay for inpatient rehab generally is dictated by someone's level of injury. And of course, there's a big part of how much funding we have through their insurance. So people with lower injuries, so more like lower paraplegia, are likely to be in rehab a shorter time. People with higher level injuries, with cervical type injuries that have tetraplegia, are more likely to be in rehab for longer periods of time. So for the most part, we will conclude the intervention when they discharge from rehab. With rare exceptions, if someone has a very prolonged time on the rehab unit, and that tends to be more related to challenges with discharge, somewhat outside of the actual specifics to the spinal cord injury.
So it sounds like this pilot study, and then if it looks promising, you'll go on to try and get funding for a larger study. If it ends up, you find out that this is actually something that really helps people to be more active and have better cardiovascular health and all that down the road, what do you see as the kind of future for this kind of treatment?
You know, our hope is, if in fact it does show to be something that both can be done during the relatively short U.S. healthcare system inpatient rehab stay and is also effective both potentially cardiovascularly and in keeping people active in the future, our hope is that this becomes a standard of care so that when you come to rehab with a new spinal cord injury, you're introduced to and instructed in this intervention. And so this may become part of your life. Some research has shown actually that this intensive sprint type of training, whether it's done with the arm ergometer or different types of intensive interval training that people can pursue both with and without a spinal cord injury, it has similar cardiovascular benefits as more traditional, like moderate intensity cardiovascular exercise. So our hope is that if this shows to be an effective intervention, that it'll be part of the standard program offered during inpatient rehab. And if we find that discharging patients with the arm ergometer helps them sort of stick to it, that we feel like we would have additional data, additional scientific evidence that insurance companies should potentially fund this type of exercise equipment for people once they're discharged from the hospital.
Yeah, because arm ergometers are not necessarily just available everywhere, are they? I mean, or are they? If you went to a YMCA, could somebody with a spinal cord injury access an arm ergometer, for example, or a typical gym that's in the community?
They're certainly not available everywhere. They are probably in some locations. They may be available in different physical therapy clinics. And like I mentioned, you can get one for home use. So not certainly not cheap, certainly not the most expensive type of equipment you're going to buy or your insurance is going to buy after this type of injury. But with all the costs associated with a new spinal cord injury, it definitely could be a barrier to, for someone to get like a home device.
Yeah, I think it's really cool because I think getting people back to exercise early and kind of overcoming some of those barriers and having something that they could have at home would be amazing. I know that's often such a difficult thing and people being ready to go right back to the community, even if they could access something. That's great.
Yeah.
I would guess that this is going to be something that both the team and patients are excited about, something that they can really get into and potentially see some benefit from.
Yeah, we certainly hope so and think that that will be the case.
So we're going to be totally excited to see the results of this research. And if it's okay with you, we'll check back with you in a couple of years and see what you found and see what the next steps are, what direction you're going to go in the next phase.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'll look forward to it.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Debbie. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and we look forward to hearing more.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the SCI Forum podcast. To learn more or to make a donation, please visit sci.washington.edu.